Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Happening now, breaking news, witness protection. CNN has learned that lawmakers are considering extreme measures to protect the whistleblower who complained about President Trump. Should that person testify before Congress, including giving secret locations and even disguising the person's voice? More demands. The impeachment inquiry expands as House Democrats subpoena the Pentagon and the Office of Management and Budget and threaten to subpoena associates of Rudy Giuliani. All this as a second whistleblower now comes forward. Abandoning allies. President Trump draws rare Republican criticism over his decision to pull U.S. forces from northern Syria, clearing the way for a Turkish attack on America's Kurdish allies, a critical partner in the war against ISIS, and calling foul. The NBA under attack for apologizing to China for a general manager's tweet supporting Hong Kong protesters is one of America's favorite sports leagues now putting money over principle. I'm Wolf Blitzer. You're in the Situation Room.
This is CNN Breaking News.
We're following breaking news, including some fast-moving new developments in the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. Sources are now telling CNN that the House Intelligence Committee and lawyers for the whistleblower who filed a complaint about the president, they are now discussing what are being described as extreme measures to protect the individual's identity due to growing safety concerns. Also breaking this hour, House Democrats are now threatening to subpoena three associates of the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. And they're expanding their probe to the Pentagon and the Office of Management and Budget, issuing subpoenas for documents about the freezing of aid to Ukraine. We'll talk about that and more with Congressman Rajna Krishnamurthy of the Intelligence and Oversight Committees. And our correspondents and analysts are also standing by. First, let's go straight to Capitol Hill. Our senior congressional correspondent, Manu Raju, is on the scene for us. Manu, what's the latest? What are you picking up?
Well, tonight, Democrats and the lawyers for the whistleblower who made that complaint against President Trump's conduct have been discussing what are just being described as, quote, extreme measures to protect the whistleblower's identity in case that individual were to come and testify before the House Intelligence Committee. Now, Democrats are concerned that President Trump's attacks against this whistleblower, raising concerns about his or her credibility, could mean that this individual could be in harm's way if his or her identity is ultimately leaked. So what they are discussing behind the scenes are a range of options, including potentially disguising the voice of this individual, potentially hiding the person's image, potentially doing this off-site, and also limiting the number of staff and members from actually going and interviewing this person, perhaps even not doing it on Capitol Hill because this person's identity may be seen, even though there are many ways to enter the Congress, enter the Capitol without being seen by the press. But nevertheless, this all underscores the dramatic stakes ahead of what would be significant testimony by this individual to come before this committee. Of course, it would be done behind closed doors. But at the moment, Wolf, Democrats are going to set their sights on other individuals they want to bring forward first, hope to finish those interviews, and then at that point, see if they can bring this whistleblower forward. But at the moment, no deal reached to bring this person yet. One reason why, they're trying to protect this person's identity, Wolf.
All right, Manu, thanks very much. Manu with the latest up on Capitol Hill. Let's go to the White House right now. Our chief White House correspondent, Jim Acosta, is there. Jim, the president continues to rail against all of this.
That's right, Wolf. And the president just wrapped up some comments a few moments ago talking about his trade agreement that he just announced with Japan. The president once again called the impeachment inquiry up on Capitol Hill a scam. At one point, he told reporters just a few moments ago that you shouldn't be able to impeach a president for doing a good job. But of course, the impeachment inquiry continues up on Capitol Hill, and the president is behaving even more unpredictably as the impeachment inquiry ensnares more top officials in the administration. The president is whipping up another firestorm, by the way. He just talked about this over Syria, announcing he's giving the green light to Turkey to wipe out Kurdish forces that had helped the U.S. defeat ISIS. And Republicans are pushing back against that idea, pushing back against the president when it comes to Syria, but not so much on Ukraine.
President Trump was all smiles in front of the cameras as his top aide showered him in applause. But the Trump administration is sinking deeper into the impeachment quicksand up on Capitol Hill, as House Democrats have issued new subpoenas to Defense Secretary Mark Esper and the acting head of the Office of Management and Budget for information about the president's phone call with the leader of Ukraine that included a request for dirt on Joe Biden. The letter doesn't mince words, insisting each subpoena compels you to produce the documents by October 15, 2019. With a second whistleblower coming forward, White House allies are trotting out shifting explanations for the president's comments, with some in the GOP claiming Mr. Trump was only joking when he asked China to investigate Biden.
You really think he was serious about thinking that China's going to investigate the Biden family?
He said it right there in public.
I think he's getting, as I think Senator Rubio said a couple days ago, I think he's getting the press all spun up about this.
Though economic advisor Larry Kudlow wasn't sure about that.
Is the president joking or in any way not serious when he suggested the Chinese should investigate the Biden?
I don't honestly know.
But the president is also claiming Energy Secretary Rick Perry urged him to turn to the Ukrainians.
Absolutely. I asked the president multiple times, Mr. President, we think it is in the United States and in Ukraine's best interest that you and the president of Ukraine have conversations, that you discuss the options that are there. So absolutely, yes.
Even though Perry insisted, Biden didn't come up.
It's not once. As God is my witness, not once was a Biden name, not the former vice president, not his son, ever mentioned.
The president and his defenders sounded unhinged at times over the weekend, with Mr. Trump tweeting House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was guilty of treason and that Utah Senator Mitt Romney is a pompous ass. GOP Senator Ron Johnson, chair of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, stood by Mr. Trump by saying he doesn't trust parts of the intelligence community.
You believe the FBI and the CIA,
John Brennan? No, I don't trust any of these guys in the Obama administration. I don't trust any of them.
The president offered up a new distraction from the impeachment drama, announcing he will allow Turkey to sweep into Syria, withdrawing U.S. forces and jeopardizing Kurdish fighters who have helped in the battle against ISIS. But Mr. Trump warned, if Turkey does anything that I, in my great and unmatched wisdom, consider to be off limits, I will totally destroy and obliterate the economy of Turkey. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell took issue with the president, stating a precipitous withdrawal of U.S. forces from Syria would only benefit Russia, Iran, and the Assad regime, and it would increase the risk that ISIS and other terrorist groups regroup. A rare moment of dissent from inside the GOP.
ISIS is not defeated, my friend. The biggest lie being told by the administration that ISIS is defeated. This impulsive decision by the president has undone all the gains we've made, thrown the region into further chaos.
The president was asked why he's siding with autocratic leaders over the nation's Kurdish allies.
Well, I'm not siding with anybody. We want to bring our troops back home, and I got elected on that.
Now, there's one more Republican senator to add to the list who emerged to criticize Mr. Trump's phone call with the president of Ukraine. Ohio Senator Rob Portman told the Columbus Dispatch the president should not have raised the Biden issue on that call, period. That's in the words of Senator Portman. But the senator said the president's actions do not warrant impeachment. So he's not there at that point yet, Wolf.
Jim Acosta at the White House, thank you. Lots going on. Let's get some more now on the president's truly stunning decision to abandon Washington's main ally in the war against ISIS by clearing the way for a Turkish attack on Kurdish forces in northern Syria. Let's bring in our national security reporter, Kylie Atwood. Kylie, there's a lot of concern, not just from Democrats, but a lot of Republicans as well. What the president has announced could cause a massive slaughter of Kurds.
That's right. We've seen opposition throughout the day, as you said, not just from Democrats and regional experts, but also from Republicans. Senator Lindsey Graham calling this a short-sighted and irresponsible decision by the president. We also heard from Senator Ted Cruz saying that reliable allies do not abandon their friends. Now, the Kurds have been fighting alongside the U.S., U.S. forces in Syria for the greater part of the last few years. They are our allies there. And so, therefore, if the U.S. does allow this Turkish offensive, which the White House statement said they would be allowing yesterday, it abandons the people that have been fighting alongside the U.S. for years, the people that have helped the U.S. to defeat ISIS in Syria. And that's why you're seeing these Republicans come out and say, we cannot be doing this right now.
Kylie Atwood with that. Thank you very much. Let's get some more on all of this. Truly dramatic developments. Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy of Illinois is joining us. He's a member of both the Intelligence and the Oversight Committees. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us. I want to start with the breaking news that the House Intelligence Committee is now considering taking what are being described as extreme measures to conceal the whistleblower's identity, including limiting the presence of staff and members during testimony and disguising the individual's image and voice. Do you think all that is necessary?
Well, we're kind of in an unusual situation where the president is basically threatening the whistleblower. We've heard the various pieces of rhetoric that he's directed toward the whistleblower. He wants to know the identity of the whistleblower. And so this extremely unusual situation, unfortunately, demands extreme measures in terms of protecting the security of the whistleblower. We cannot allow the president to somehow get to the whistleblower or threaten him or discourage him or her from telling their side of the story and us learning what exactly is the extent of the alleged scheme displayed in his complaint.
Do you trust Republican lawmakers to protect this official, this whistleblower, from exposure?
I'd like to trust the secrecy of our identities of whistleblowers and other important facts to all members of our committee. However, the fact of the matter is that we can't guarantee 100% assurance or safety for this whistleblower in the current situation using normal methods or measures. And so that's why we have to resort to, these extreme measures which you described.
Do you think this person, this whistleblower's life, is actually potentially in danger?
I don't know about that, and I can't comment on that. That being said, what the president has said in terms of calling him or her a spy or their associates spies and that they would be handled a certain way in the past would suggest that, even their personal safety is something that we have to be concerned about right now.
As you know, there's now a second whistleblower who claims to have what's being described as first-hand knowledge backing up the complaint filed by the original whistleblower. Do you know anything else about the information this official is prepared to disclose?
I do not. I do not know this whistleblower's identity. However, based on what the Inspector General has said in the past, there are other individuals who corroborate the first whistleblower's complaint. That's what led the Inspector General to call the whistleblower's complaint both credible and urgent. And so, all I know is what I've read in the press from the attorney for this second whistleblower. And so I would just commend this person for coming forward. And hopefully this person will be allowed to follow the process as it was intended, namely, file a whistleblower complaint with the Inspector General. The Inspector General then investigates it. And then in this case, if it happens, I hope that the acting Director of National Intelligence, McGuire, forwards that complaint to us if it's judged to be credible and urgent, unlike what happened before.
As you also know, House Democrats, they want to know a lot more about the freezing of foreign aid, economic and military assistance to Ukraine.
Yes, sir.
How do these latest subpoenas to the Pentagon, the Office of Management and Budget, fit into the overall impeachment probe?
Yes. So basically, according to press reports, the White House instructed Mr. Mulvaney, the director of the Office of Management and Budget, and also the acting White House Chief of Staff, to basically then instruct the Defense Department and the State Department to freeze the aid and to convey to Congress that the aid was being frozen because of a quote-unquote interagency process. Again, according to press reports, Officials at the State and Defense Department were alarmed at this prospect, they actually tried to get that directive reversed. So we need to understand why that aid was being frozen, what was actually conveyed to Mick Mulvaney, but also to officials at the State and Defense Department, and whether these other supposed reasons for freezing the aid were given. It doesn't sound like they were, and I think everybody is right now quite puzzled on Capitol Hill, given the fact that we appropriated this aid in September 2018, a whole year ago, and it still hasn't reached Ukraine.
Congressman Christian Murthy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Wolf.
Still ahead, President Trump draws bipartisan criticism as Republicans find their voices and slam his decision to abandon Kurdish forces who've helped the U.S. defeat ISIS. Also, Joe Biden and his campaign try to cope with dual threats, President Trump's attacks and the surge in the polls by Senator Elizabeth Warren. We're following multiple breaking stories, including new subpoenas and demands for documents in the rapidly expanding impeachment investigation of President Trump. This comes as we're learning attorneys for the House Intelligence Committee are discussing what are being described as extreme measures to protect the identity of the original whistleblower if that person does testify. Let's get some insight from our political and legal experts. Jeffrey Toobin, you think these extreme measures to protect this whistleblower are really necessary?
I sure do. And let me give you three words why. Christine Blasey Ford. Think about that woman who was, you could say, the whistleblower in the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, whose life was turned upside down, who was harassed, who has at least for many months couldn't live in her house. And that's minor league baseball compared to the World Series of an impeachment situation. So this person, and it may be more than one person, is going to be an enormous target, and every security precaution should be taken. I wonder if it's going to work, but certainly they should try.
Yeah, they should obviously try. You know, John Kirby, Democrats also now want the impeachment probe to go forward with new documents. They're subpoenaing new documents from the Defense Secretary, Mark Esper. What sort of information might the Pentagon have that could be relevant to the impeachment probe?
I'm sure there'll be internal correspondence, particularly on the classified email system, about sort of, you know, the back and forth over these decisions. They'll probably want some policy analysis about the systems that were going to be applied and what the benefits of supplying those systems were. And then I think some budget documents, too, in terms of the cost of providing these systems and the maintenance and upkeep of them. And I think that all that will be very fairly simple and straightforward for the Pentagon to provide.
And now, supposedly, we're hearing that there's a second whistleblower who has firsthand information about what happened during that phone call and other relevant information. How valuable might this second whistleblower be?
Well, Wolf, it's what you said, firsthand knowledge, right? So the knock on the first whistleblower was, well, this is all secondhand and hearsay. I will note, by the way, that's the Trump spin. I will note everything that we know in the whistleblower complaint jibes with what we know about the Ukraine call and everything else thus far, despite Donald Trump's claims to the contrary. But firsthand knowledge, intelligence community, confirmation, affirmation, a stronger foundation on which Democrats will look to probe the president.
Yeah, if Nia, the second whistleblower, was listening in on that phone call, saw the transcript with the, you know, sort of rough transcript, even the White House says it wasn't an official transcript, saw it and has complaints about what was in that so-called transcript or other relevant information, that could be very significant if that person has that firsthand kind of knowledge.
That's right. Very significant and hard for Donald Trump as well as his Republican allies to keep attacking this first whistleblower, right? Because, again, you have somebody else who's corroborating what the whistleblower said, in addition to everything that the Democrats already have, right? The text messages that came out of the Volcker testimony, some of the other witnesses that likely came out of the IG of the IC's testimony as well, in addition to the memo of the transcript, in addition to the roadmap that the whistleblower complaint provided. So, yeah, the more people you get in on this in terms of showing that they had problems with what the president said in those conversations, I think the harder it is going to be. I think that the Republicans and certainly Donald Trump will still try to tear down the credibility of everyone who comes
deep
out.
State.
The deep state. I mean, that is their whole criticism of this thing, that there's this whole plot beginning from when the president ran for office to bring him down.
You've heard now some of the president's supporters in the Senate and elsewhere say, you know, he was just joking when he said that China should investigate the Bidens as well. He wasn't really serious, although when we look at the tape, he was obviously very, very serious. You've got an important column, CNN.com, in which you said the president has tried this routine before. If past is indeed prologue, as they say, the joke alibi will remain. After all, it has worked before for Trump when staff have had to do cleanup after his outrageous comments or claims. Consider these greatest hits. Remember when candidate Trump said, Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 Hillary Clinton emails that are missing. When asked about it by special counsel Robert Mueller, Trump's written answer was essentially, lighten up.
Right. That's what his lawyers are. I just happen to have his written answer here. And it says that was done, quote, in jest and sarcastically, as was apparent to any objective observer. Of course it was. But that is the excuse, the joke excuse, they seem to use for everything. Yep. Did you promise pardons to people who might break the law on immigration policy, on building the wall? Oh, yeah, that was joking. I really didn't do that. So they use that time and time again. And over the weekend, of course, we saw it repeatedly, starting with Senator Marco Rubio, who said the president wasn't serious. He just loves to drive you guys crazy. And then Congressman Jordan and down the list of people who finally had something else to kind of glom onto as if it made any sense, as if the president was standing there on the lawn and talking to China while involved in trade negotiations and was kind of joking. I mean, that's absurd.
He clearly wasn't joking when he said that.
Let's say he was joking, which he wasn't, to Gloria's point.
Yeah.
Is China aware that he was being sarcastic? I mean, this is the problem. Like, did they talk to the Chinese and say, oh, FYI, he was joking?
Because he's such a comedian and a cut-up.
And he's clearly not, by the way.
Let me get Jeffrey, and then Nia. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
He's not as funny as I am.
Yeah, and, that is true, though.
I think it's unlikely. I mean, it's just preposterous. Right. I mean, all you have to do is look at his statement about China. He wasn't joking. I mean, you know, his whole defense is that there's nothing wrong with asking Ukraine or asking China or Italy or any of these countries that are now involved to help gather dirt. So why is that a joke? It's not a joke. I mean, that's his defense.
Reporting shows that he at least brought up Biden while he was on the phone with China, basically brought up Biden as well as Warren. Was that just a joke? Was he telling a joke about Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden? Unlikely. And we also know that he did this with Ukraine, right? We're in the middle of a conversation based on a transcript that he basically said, Ukraine, please investigate Biden. So it's utterly believable that he really wants China to do the same
thing. Republicans are just looking for something. Yeah. They're desperate for something to glom onto. And if you look at all their talking points, it's about process, really. It's not about defending Donald Trump's behavior. And so one of these defenses, which has been used by people in his press shop over the years, he was just joking. And so it's something that members of Republicans have sort of glommed onto, but it won't stick. It can't last. He wasn't joking. And as Chris points out, it's not a joke if you're the Chinese.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's just not a joke. What is he talking about? Does he want us to do this? Because they're not joking. They're involved in serious trade negotiations, and they want to know, is this the way they get in the door?
Yeah.
Stick around. Everybody stick around. There's a lot more we're following on all the breaking news. We'll do that right after this. We're back with our experts. John Kirby, you served in the Navy for a long time. You're a retired admiral. What do you make of the president's sudden decision all of a sudden to announce he's pulling U.S. troops out of northern Syria?
Yeah, it seems like it's very much based on, you know, policy by grievance. If you looked at his tweet, it's all about how NATO's not doing enough, European allies need to do enough, we've been over there too long. But it's not in the national security interest. If you believe ISIS is still a threat to American interests and to our allies and partners, which it is, and the military and the intelligence community say that, then you got to sustain the victory over them. You've destroyed them physically on the ground, yes, but you haven't destroyed them as a network. That's what those small troops were doing in Syria to help defeat the network and to create a sustainable set of conditions that they couldn't resurge. So pulling them out like that, letting Turkey come in, that's only going to make it harder for the SDF, our allies, our Kurdish allies and friends, to fight ISIS, because they're going to be wanting, I'm sure, forced to react to Turkish incursion.
Swift bipartisan condemnation of the president's decision, including from obviously Republicans, Gloria, huge mistake, betraying an ally, disastrous, ensures ISIS comeback, short-sighted and irresponsible, a stain on America's honor, catastrophic a mistake, terribly unwise decision. I could go on.
Right.
These are from Republicans, including Republican leaders.
You know what I want to know? I want to know if General Mattis is going to say something at some point, because this is why he left. This is why he quit.
Yeah.
He said he couldn't agree with policy. It was shortly after the president announced his Syria policy. And I'm sure he agrees with all of these quotes that you just showed up on the screen. And I'm sure the president is kind of stewing because he clearly wanted to change the subject from all of this, but he's changed the subject to something that that is enormously unpopular. And Republicans, I think, don't, you know, they can say this because unlike with impeachment, there's no political price to Republicans for disagreeing with the president on Syria the way there the way there is on Ukraine in terms of they've got to support him on that. Here they are.
Also, some level of safety in numbers, too, by the way. I mean, one of the things that you'll see with impeachment is if they're going to jump, many of them will jump at the same time. You saw all of those statements come out this morning. But Gloria's exactly right. The difference between coming out in favor of impeachment versus coming out in favor of Syria, the American voter, by and large, does not make decisions based on where your senator or even your president's position is vis-a-vis Syria.
Go ahead, Jeffrey.
But isn't it true that the public, you know, not 100%, is more with Trump than with the politicians on this one? Do you think there's an enormous desire for our troops to be over in Syria for years more, to be in Afghanistan for almost 20 years? I mean, I think the president may have his finger on the pulse. Now, I don't know if it's in the national security interest, but I don't see this as a political negative for the president at all.
Yeah, it's certainly what he ran on, right? I mean, he sounded a bit like Rand Paul as he was running for the Republican nomination and clearly got the Republican nomination. And is in many ways governed in this way. And you saw Rand Paul come out and say, yes, that he agrees with this decision. A little, you know, odd that it comes out at this point as the president is trying to, you know, get Republicans to hold the line on Ukraine and not revolt. We've seen a very few signs that any Republicans are going to break away from him in any serious way on the Ukraine scandal. But with this, we did see sort of Republicans remember who they are, right, in terms of national security policy and just in terms of being hawks when it comes to national
security. And a reminder, I think, too, just to Nia's point, a reminder of how radically different Donald Trump's vision, I don't know if you call it conservatism, but Donald Trump's vision of Trumpism on the domestic and the international front is from traditional conservative policy proposals. Look at what George Bush said and did, George W. Bush, versus Donald Trump. You would think they were not just from different parties, but from different planets in terms of their approach.
That would make him very happy to
hear, by the way.
You know, I will. Trump.
Yeah, he'll love that. And that's to Jeffrey's point. Politically speaking, he's probably right. People are sick of these foreign tendencies.
I used to interview Donald Trump all the time before he became president of the United States, going back 20 years plus. And he's been on this issue. He's been very consistent. Get the troops out of Iraq. Get them out of Afghanistan. At that time, there were no troops in Syria. But he didn't even want troops in Japan or South Korea or Germany. Why are they there? Right. The United States is spending too much. He would say that consistently for the longest time.
Right. And look, I understand that many Americans are uncomfortable with troops being deployed in harm's way for extended periods of time. That's and many troops are bearing the brunt of that. And I think they would appreciate a break as well. But there are some real significant pragmatic reasons for our national security to have them doing certain things. The footprint in Syria hasn't been that big. It's been very specifically targeted against ISIS. And ISIS was and remains a legitimate threat to our interests and those of our allies and partners.
Everybody stick around. There's a lot more news that's coming up, including Joe Biden. He's now struggling to find the right response to President Trump's attacks on him and his family, as well as rapidly shifting poll numbers. Tonight, the former Vice President Joe Biden is facing a two-front challenge, responding to President Trump's attacks, as well as coping with Senator Elizabeth Warren's surge in recent polls. Our senior Washington correspondent, Jeff Zeleny, is keeping his eye on all of this. So what are you seeing, Jeff? How's he coping with these threats?
Well, if there's no question that Joe Biden has wanted one thing all along, that's a head-to-head matchup with the president.
now that he has that, at least in some respects rhetorically, he is struggling to, of course, respond to that. But we've seen over the weekend and in recent days him sharpening his rhetoric against the president, defending himself even more. Of course, the Biden campaign has been getting a ton of advice on how to handle this situation. He did not want, I'm told, the president to hijack his campaign message, but he also wanted to push back forcefully. But I talked to one senior confidant to the former vice president who said they really are not sure what the politics of this long term will be. Listen to what this confidant told me. He said, I'm not going to sit here and say there is no concern. As this drags on, we don't know. No one knows. So the Biden campaign is making it clear that they believe this head-to-head matchup with them is good, but they, of course, are keeping their eye on Elizabeth Warren. She's been rising in the polls and, of course, raising $10 million more in the third quarter here, Wolf. So this combined challenge makes things very uncertain for this presidential race.
The Biden folks, they're pointing to a new poll in a key state that suggests he has the best chance of beating President Trump.
It does. And that is one thing that really bolsters the Biden argument, they say, all along. This poll in Wisconsin. Take a look at these numbers out today in this brand new poll. Joe Biden, Donald Trump, 48-39. 9 percentage points there, a difference. When you go on to Bernie Sanders versus President Trump, or Elizabeth Warren right there, 45-41. And then Bernie Sanders, 45-40. So about in the same range there for President Trump, but Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are still slightly behind Joe Biden. So the Biden campaign making the argument that he is the strongest Democrat to take him on. But Wolf, again, we do not know where this impeachment inquiry is going. No one knows the politics of this or how it will play out for Joe Biden.
Very intriguing indeed. All right, Jeff Zeleny, thanks very much. Coming up, the NBA grovels to China as American basketball and Chinese politics collide. There's new fallout tonight from a tweet that's landed an NBA team in trouble with China. CNN's Brian Todd is joining us right now. Brian, this has to do with the ongoing protests in Hong Kong.
It does, Wolf. One NBA general manager posted a simple tweet over the weekend expressing support for the protesters in Hong Kong. But because of his team's ties to Chinese basketball and to one of China's most famous athletes, and because of the NBA's financial stake in China, there is considerable fallout from Beijing to Washington tonight. Tonight, the National Basketball Association is at risk of fouling out in China, while also facing boos and backlash from fans back home. It all began when the general manager of the NBA's Houston Rockets, Daryl Morey, posted this on Twitter over the weekend. Fight for freedom. Stand with Hong Kong. But what may have seemed like a simple tweet ignited a geopolitical firestorm. That's because Morey's comment was a clear show of support for anti-China protesters who have been out in force on Hong Kong's streets for months. Hong Kong is officially part of China, and to say the Chinese government was furious would be an understatement.
We want to warn people like Morey that it is not realistic for them to earn a large amount of money from China while hurting the feelings of the Chinese people.
Chinese state TV demanded an apology. But what happened next, many fans say, was an airball by the NBA. The league, which has stood up for free speech by its players when it comes to U.S. politics, backed down, saying Morey's views have deeply offended many of our friends and fans in China, which is regrettable. The Rockets' owner and star player also distanced themselves from their own general manager.
Yeah, we apologize. You know, we love China. We love, you know, playing there.
Even Daryl Morey himself, whose original tweet has since been deleted, said he didn't intend to offend anyone in China, saying in a follow-up tweet, I have had a lot of opportunities since that tweet to hear and consider other perspectives.
The NBA has led the way in progressive thought, in ideology, in speaking your mind, and in basically doing the right thing culturally. And to see the NBA cave in this manner is absolutely stunning.
So why would the NBA, which one senator derisively called the wokest professional sports league, buckle to pressure from a foreign power? Experts say it's because China is a financial slam dunk for the NBA, worth billions. The NBA has at least 25 marketing partnerships and more than 200 stores in China. More than 600 million people watched NBA games on Chinese TV during the 2017-2018 season.
The fact is that the NBA ratings were actually higher in China. More people in China watched the NBA than watched the NBA in the United States. extraordinary.
China, sports analysts say, knows its influence on and off the court and immediately started issuing threats. The Chinese Basketball Association, led by the iconic Yao Ming, a former Rockets star player himself, has said it would suspend cooperation with the Rockets. The company Tencent Sports, the NBA's exclusive digital partner for China, is suspending live streaming of Rockets games.
China has a long track record of placing pressure on governments and companies that that say things that offend the Chinese Communist Party.
But tonight, the NBA's response has led to a Rockets red glare, with members of Congress and others going hard in the paint against the NBA. Leaders on both sides of the aisle, from Republican Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio to Democrats Chuck Schumer and Congresswoman Jackie Speier, are calling the NBA hypocritical. Republican Senator Rick Scott is demanding a meeting with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver.
But the NBA is not the only powerful American entity to defer to China recently. Sources told CNN that during a call this summer, President Trump promised Chinese President Xi Jinping that the U.S. government would not speak out about the pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong while trade talks continued.
So, Brian, what's the concern going forward now?
Considerable concern from political analysts and others, Wolf, going forward. They say between this incident and the NBA, with the NBA, and President Trump's deference to Xi Jinping over Hong Kong, well, China could now feel emboldened in the future to intimidate any American business into towing their line. Or the Chinese could possibly feel emboldened enough to send security forces en masse to repress those protesters in Hong Kong. People have been worried about that for a long time.
Brian Todd reporting for us. Let's see what happens on this front. Thanks very much. There's more breaking news next. Fear about safety has House Democrats weighing extreme measures to protect the whistleblower when and if that person testifies in the impeachment inquiry. We're learning new details.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.